through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Jed Long Jr. has a chance to win this one in 10 for the Mariners. Castillo sets, fires. Swing out to right field. This is on its way back, and it's gone! Walk-off home run! You did it, Jed Long Jr.
I'm sorry.
What a start!
What a start!
Peeling back the curtain here. We got to do this to start off the show. I tell Stacy, like seconds before playing that, I'm going to play a highlight to start the show. Don't talk over
it. Playing highlight to start the show. Don't talk over.
And then she does just that.
Because Jake distracted me.
I didn't do anything. Stacy, I do it every time before a show. You cannot use that.
I am on a lot of allergy medication, and I'm also in a bit of a haze because of the Mariners past weekend. This series.
Well played.
Thank you. I don't even know what this was from. Now, this is from Mariners PR. The Mariners have recorded this past series. Three walk-off wins in the same series for the first time since September of 2002 versus Texas. That is insane, and it was quite the series. You know what? Let's take a trip down memory lane. We don't have far back to go. Let's just start with Thursday night, right? Now you have Shed Long. Let's start this out on Thursday, doubling on a line drive in the bottom of the ninth.
Fairbanks assigned the set, delivers, swinging a line drive to left field, down the line for a base hit. Moore running third, being waved in. He's going to score around to third, diving into the bag. Bowers, the throw in by a Rosarena, cut off by the shortstop Walls. Long in at second base with an RBI double. Shed has tied it up at 5-5 here in the bottom of the ninth inning. Holy smokes, what a big base hit by Shed Long, his second hit of the night, and his second double ties it in the bottom of the ninth.
Ties it up in the bottom of the ninth, but oh, don't worry, Kyle Seager is there to finish it. Singles on a grounder to drive in Jake Bowers.
The Mariners looking for a walk-off win here in the bottom of the ninth inning. And the Fairbanks 0-1 pitch on the way to Kyle Seager. Swinging the ground ball, base in the right field. The Mariners win it. Bowers will score. Kyle Seager with a pinch hit. RBI walk-off single here in the bottom of the ninth. And the Mariners come from behind and beat the Rays 6-5 to take the opening game of this four-game series. And Seager's getting mobbed out there in shallow right field.
Of course, you got to win on Friday, but the Mariners have a flair for the dramatic. They had to keep the walk-off wins coming, so you get to Saturday. Now, early in the game, bottom of the second, hot-hitting J.P. Crawford hits his first grand slam of his career.
Fleming ready, and the 0-1 to Crawford, swinging a drive deep to right field. Margot going back, and this one is gone! Grand salami time! Grandma, get out the rye bread and mustard! It is grand salami time! J.P. Crawford with a line shot into the lower deck in straightaway right field. His fifth home run of the season.
Can I just say that was a frozen rope? I couldn't believe it got over. As I was watching it, I thought it was going to hit off the top of the wall, maybe get a double out of it, and it ends up going over the fence. Absolutely insane. That was awesome to see from J.P. Crawford, who everybody's been talking about, not a power hitter, but when you make great contact on the ball and consistent contact, guess what, Stacy? Good things happen.
And good things continued to happen because in addition to J.P. Crawford's grand slam later in the game, you're in extras. Once again, Mitch Haniger singles to drive in Crawford for the win.
Here comes his first pitch. Swung on, lasered into left field. That's down for a base hit. J.P. Crawford rounding third base. He's being waved in. The throw to plate is not in time. It is party time at home plate. A walk-off winner. J.P. Crawford scores. Mitch Haniger wins the game. And the Mariners walk it off for the second time in the series. 6-5 in 10 innings. The Mariners win it.
And that would have been enough. right? Like, even with a loss on Sunday, it would have been enough to have those two walk-offs, to have those three wins in a row, and you would have thought, wow, what a series against a team that was, at one point, very recently,
I definitely
for the best
did.
Record in the AL, right? It's a very kind of, like, a mentality of, like, you know what? That's good. I don't need any more dessert. That's fine for me. I've had a lot today. I've had a lot of sugar today. But no, Jake, because on Sunday, it continued with maybe the best moment.
Give me one more slice.
You got home runs from Luis Lorenz and Ty France, but the best of the series belonged to Shed Long, because it wasn't just a home run. It was a walk-off grand slam in extras.
Shed Long Jr. has a chance to win this one in 10 for the Mariners. Castillo sets, fires. Swing out to right field. This is on its way back, and it's gone! Walk-off home run! You did it, Shed Long Jr.
Man, it's phenomenal.
So fun.
Now, you guys are going to hear from Shed Long twice. So the first time you're going to hear from him right here, this was what he had to say about his walk-off grand slam.
Man, it was unbelievable. Honestly, unbelievable. Just a great feeling. I mean, it's one of the coolest things you can do in baseball, in my opinion. So, I mean, it was a great feeling just rounding the bases and just knowing that I was able to help my team win.
The second time you're going to hear from him, oh, that would be today, Jake, at 1:30, because Shed is going to be joining us to talk about this series and his huge play to wrap things up.
Can't wait to talk to Shed Long. I'm super fired up about it. And also got a very important question about his accessories that he's always swagged out. So,
question.
Yeah, got big questions for Shed Long.
This was obviously a really fun series. It was a blast to watch. Here's the question we have coming out of it, though. Now, sweeping the Rays in June is not nothing. But if it's not indicative of this being a playoff team this year, which all three of us agreed it wasn't, then what does it mean? What does it mean to sweep the Rays in June? You can say, like, oh, it's just baseball luck. It's chaos ball. It is what it is. But I think there's something there, right? And, you know, you could be like me and you can spend a ridiculous amount of time trolling through the comments of the SB Nation thread for the Rays and seeing them say, oh, the Rays just played down to the Mariners. But over a 4-game series, you also saw some really good stuff from the Mariners that makes you wonder what the ceilings of some of these guys look like, what the future could look like for this team. I don't think that they reached that this year. This is still a year toward building. Then what does it mean? What do you take from this, Jake?
Yeah, one thing real quick before I get into that is how fun the crowd was. Watching the game, you could see that the crowd, I mean, it was peak baseball. Living, breathing, dying with every single pitch, every single hit. Just totally into the action at the end of the games. I mean, it was so fun to watch from every aspect of it. So, you know, hats off to anybody that was there over the weekend. You guys were awesome in terms of, you know, the energy that you brought into T-Mobile Park. But in terms of what it brings, there's a couple of things that it gets me thinking about. But number one, you mentioned the Rays and fans saying that they played down to the Mariners. Someone made a comment that they're like, oh, the Mariners are like the Seahawks. They play up and down to their opponent. No. They're towards the bottom, so they're not playing down to anybody. They'd be playing kind of at their level, so to speak. But they certainly, except for one series this year, they play up to their opponents. I'll give them that. Except for that Padres series, that abysmal Padres series, and really that was kind of the low point of the season for this team with everything that they were going through injury-wise, guys out with COVID, you know, all sorts of stuff. That was a low point. Outside of that, they have risen to the challenge. And I think that's attributed to Scott Servais, and I think that's attributed to how truly competitive this group is. They want to meet the challenge. And when we talked to Scott Servais on Tuesday of last week, you know, he was saying, hey, we're focused on the series that we have now. But Shannon Dreyer asked him about his thoughts on the Rays coming into town and how he responded, saying how excited he was for these guys to come into town. They're a great group. They bring, you know, tremendous matchups in terms of their pitching unit and all that stuff. But this is something that I think that you have a young group, a competitive group, a fiery group, and when they get the opportunity to compete against some of the best teams in baseball, they have certainly risen to the challenge more times than not.
Now, looking at the Mac and Jack's text line, of course, you got some listeners saying, well, here's what I think. Here's what I think it means from the 253. It means we're finally going to see the fun part of a rebuild. Now, that's one way to look at it. When you've got a rebuild, you've got a young roster, you're going to have guys still making mistakes. You're going to have some boneheaded mistakes. You're going to have some mistakes, growing mistakes where you just see, hit list streaks and things like that. But you're also going to start to see guys where you think, oh, I see what Seattle saw. I see what the Mariners saw with this person, and I see the flash of what he can be. That's the fun part of a rebuild, right? You have nothing to lose, really, because you're not trying to contend, but then you've got a ton of young talent out there growing. The 206 says, I don't think they've turned the corner, but it means they've turned a corner. So it could mean something like that. It could mean that you're continuing to just kind of inch closer toward what you want to see for this field. Now you have, or for this team, you have some people saying, it's just a fun series. That's all it is. It's just a fun series in a year where you're still going to really struggle. And I think that can be true too. I do think though, and Curtis, you're the one that pointed this out, when it comes to playing a good team, there is something to take from that.
Yeah, I think there absolutely is, because they showed they can hang with the Tampa Bay Rays, who I don't think there's much debate as to them, being one of the best teams in baseball. They won the American League last year. But does this speak to anything bigger than just a four-game sweep over the Rays? I don't think so yet, but that doesn't mean that the Mariners can't turn this into something that is bigger than just a four-game sweep on a great weekend here in Seattle.
Right, and I think that's a big point, is I don't think there should be overreaction that all of a sudden, Stacey, as you tweeted, maybe this is the point that they
never lose a game again.
They could
Mariners
never lose.
Will never lose a game
that's
again.
That's also a possibility.
You heard it here first.
Possible, probably not going to happen.
I think it's probable.
I don't know. But, what I do think for the Mariners is that they have legitimate positive momentum that they are building with. And this is the type of momentum that you ideally want to have when you eventually bring up a Jared Kelnick at the end of the All-Star break, when you bring up a Cal Raleigh at some point in time during the season, right? These are the moments. Evan White hopefully comes back and things are positive. These are the moments, and this is the environment that you want these young guys to be a part of, rather than when Jared Kelnick came up the first time around. And it was basically the expectation or the desire by the rest of the fan base was, hey, please, Jared Kelnick, save us. Save our lineup, because our production is not good enough. That's a lot of pressure. And when you have moments like this that you're building as a group, to me, it's extremely positive. It's extremely fun. And it was such a joy to watch these Mariners over these last four games. And, man, they gave us a heck of an entertainment value, that is for sure.
And someone texting in, of course, one question I have is about Ty France, his wrist injury. Yeah, thankfully we're going to have Shannon Dreher on with us at 1. We've got a couple questions for her. Right now, though, it's time for headlines.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headlines.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Well, it's been our open. The Mariners sweeping the American League champion Tampa Bay Rays in a four-game series.
Woo-hoo!
What's the real headline?
Yeah.
Easy one here. The Mariners celebrated Father's Day like we all did, throwing the ball around in the backyard with their son, the Tampa Bay Rays. It's a gimme. It's a gimme for Father's Day.
It's too easy. It's right there.
T-ball.
It's there for the taking, for sure. Now, with the Mariners, what they did to the Tampa Bay Rays, I had a good buddy of mine. He is the mental coach for the Tampa Bay Rays, Justin Sua. And he texted me after that series and was like, definitely not expecting that. And I think that is the fun part about the Mariners, is that we weren't necessarily expecting that type of performance, but you have these moments, and this group is building confidence within these moments. And we'll see what it turns out to be, but seeing Shed Long be a part of the action, Ty France, Luis Torrens, Mitch Haniger, Kyle Seager. You watch these guys and you just see the confidence bubbling over from this group. And if it's anything like what has happened to J.B. Crawford, we might be in for a fun rest couple weeks before we get to the July All-Star break here with the Mariners. And I can't wait to watch what they do next.
Headlines.
In a 9-0 vote this morning, the Supreme Court unanimously ruled against the NCAA in a dispute about education-related compensation for athletes. What's the real headline?
College sports should be about the love of the game, millionaire NCAA president Mark Emmert said afterward in a press conference brought to you by McDonald's. Now, this is actually a cause close to my heart, and I am surprised that it was a unanimous decision on the Supreme Court. They have been hesitant to veer too much into this, but I actually liked the opinion of the majority. I know Neil Gorsuch wrote that, and Kavanaugh sounded off on it too, saying, and I'm summarizing, but Jake, you pointed this out, that in any other industry, this would be illegal. And it's true. Like, I know that there are some people that say you shouldn't pay college athletes. Fine. But by the law, when you look at the definition of what would be antitrust law or what would violate the Sherman Act, and then what would basically you'd be able to get away with the setup of the NCAA. There's a weird discrepancy happening there. It makes no sense with the way that college athletics is set up right now that they have been able to get away with not paying athletes. It is wild.
Let me read you a quick little snippet of Brett Kavanaugh's, Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh's statement on this. And Stacey, your headline, your rewrite, nail on head.
Thank you.
Is exactly what it was. But here's his quote. Quote, "But those traditions alone cannot justify the NCAA's decision to build a massive money-raising enterprise on the backs of student athletes who are not fairly compensated. Nowhere else in America can businesses get away with agreeing not to pay their workers a fair market rate on the theory that their product is defined by not paying their workers a fair market rate." Amen. And when you talk about what this is going to open to, what this is going to allow, I mean, this is going to allow the floodgates. And quite honestly, I think that the NCAA is in serious jeopardy of not even existing anymore.
Now, can I add, just so that everyone is clear on what this was? So this case specifically allows schools to provide athletes with unlimited compensation as long as it is in some way connected to their education. So this is not a ruling that made it to where schools have to pay college athletes. That not even is something that's happening. This is specifically related to costs for education.
For example, grants that other students are able to get based off of their own educational merit, their academic merit. Some are able to get grants for laptops, personal laptops, or in some cases money for their grants, for their education, things of that nature. They have been denied that because that is impermissible benefits to the athletes, and the NCAA looking at this, and I'm sure there will be another case or two looking at some of these decisions that the NCAA has made and is holding back from student athletes. But this was a big, big win in the favor of student athletes, and many more to come.
All right,
down
back to the news desk. Curtis, what else we got back there?
Headlines.
The NBA's conference finalists. Are you ready?
Yeah.
These are the teams. Like, I'm not making this up.
You're not punking us.
The Phoenix Suns, LA Clippers, Milwaukee Bucks, and Atlanta Hawks.
Oh.
This after Atlanta beating the 76ers in Game 7 on Sunday. What's the real headline?
Man, I'll say this, okay? I'll say this. We've all been making fun of Ben Simmons, but shout out to Ben Simmons for shooting a shot with Kendall Jenner. That takes a lot of guts. Now, little did we know it would be the last shot he'd attempt. So it's just that one. Just the one shot was on dating Kendall Jenner. Everything else he saved, though. Didn't need it for this series, I guess.
Oh, that hurts.
Yeah.
That hurts because it's so true. It is.
She's beautiful. She's beautiful.
He attempted zero shots in the fourth quarter from Game 4 onward.
That is insane.
Did you hear
insane
to the post-game quotes being like, absolutely no one committing to him being with this team? Which is damning.
It is damning. And when you look at Ben Simmons, this guy is so unbelievably talented. And just not everybody has that killer instinct, you know? I mean, I think that's the difference is that you look at some of the true great ones, the ones that are able to and have that mentality where they want the ball in their hands. Definitely can't say that about Ben Simmons right now. Not even close.
Yeah, it's... I don't know.
How fun is it, though, that we're going to have. I know some people and a lot of people are bummed that you're not going to see Harden or KD, Kyrie Irving, LeBron James, you know, some of the bigger stars in basketball.
I'm fine with that.
I am perfectly fine with it. I'm actually very, very excited to watch the NBA Finals now because I enjoy parody. And I also enjoy when franchises, maybe I'm partial because of what we're going through with the Mariners right now, but I love the idea that you're going to have a franchise that's going to have a monumental experience, a monumental moment for their city, for their franchise, because none of them have been A, to the finals, or B, have won the NBA championship. So to me, that is absolutely incredible, and I'm really, really excited to see what fan base is able to enjoy this in a way that most other fan bases have not been able to.
Yeah, the Bucks of these four teams are the only one to win a title in their current market. The Hawks won one when they were the St. Louis Hawks. Suns and Clippers have never won one. The Clippers, this is their first conference final.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, crazy.
It's new blood.
It is. Very much new blood, and I am here for it because the NBA has just been a bunch of retread over the last few years. And although I love watching greatness and great players, it is fun to be able to get a new experience.
We have like 10 seconds. What's your dream finals scenario? You get to pick two, obviously, just like in 10 seconds, just the two teams you actually want to see.
The two teams?
I'm fine seeing the Suns there.
I want to see the Suns and I want to see the Bucks. The
I'm
Suns
okay
and the Bucks.
Too. All right. Mike Salk joins us next. Do not go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, coming up at 45 after, we got to figure out what the Mariners are going to do with Yusei Kikuchi. Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times was on this morning with Danny and Gallant. Michael Bumpus filling in there, telling them kind of what's at stake with that decision, what could factor into the Mariners' decision. We're also going to have Mariners Radio Network's Gary Hill on with us at noon to talk about this really fun series. Plenty of fun stuff coming up. Now, I'm going to veer quickly from Mariners stuff before we bring Mike on. Did you see that in the clip for LeBron James' show, The Barbershop, or The Shop, on HBO, there's a clip of Tom Brady making fun of another quarterback saying, and it's expletive, but you're going to go with this guy, for lack of a better word, and instead of signing him to his team, and people are saying they think it's Jimmy Garoppolo.
Why would they think it's Jimmy Garoppolo? Because Jimmy was already on the 49ers, so he wasn't signed at
well,
that
no,
time.
Well, no. But I think that they're saying that Tom Brady, after he was clearly out in New England and was looking for another place to sign,
yes,
that he may have had interest in the 49ers and then was really kind of like this guy when he realized the 49ers were going to roll with Jimmy G instead of him.
Mm.
So Jimmy G was already there. He was saying when he was looking for a new landing spot in free agency, he was unpleasantly surprised to see that they were choosing to stay with Jimmy G.
Well, I would also say if I'm Tom Brady, I would feel the same exact way. And also, I'd be the one laughing now, right? I mean,
yeah,
you stuck with, if it is indeed true, you stuck with Jimmy Garoppolo over me, okay, I'm going to go win a Super Bowl with another team, and then you guys can go cry in a corner later for making that decision. If that is true, I'm very surprised that Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch weren't all over that opportunity to have Tom Brady in their program. But at the same time, I mean, we're obviously all speculating. We have no clue.
We have no clue. We're just guessing. But I'm like, who would he possibly be guessing about? A team that he would have been willing to go to, like the 49ers, that would have been completely set up there. In fact, before we get to Mariners talk with Mike Salk, I've got to ask him. He joins us now. Brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, did you hear about this clip of Tom Brady talking about a team that he would have joined in free agency? And he said, you're going to keep this, and then didn't use the phrase guy. It was an expletive, but he was very surprised. And everyone is saying he might be talking about Jimmy G.
Well, I mean, that's certainly been that would be interesting. I haven't heard it yet.
All right. We'll have to Yeah, we'll have to play it for you.
We're working on censoring it.
We're working on censoring it, but we'll have to find
it. It's
HBO.
You can say whatever you want.
Exactly. So anyways, we'll get back to that. Let's get back to the Mariners. So this was an amazing series. And Mike, we're trying to figure out what to take from it. And this has been a topic of, I'm going to say, of debate among the text line, the Mac and Jack's text line, with some people saying it means nothing and other people saying this is a step forward. This is really something. And both Jake and I are stuck on, look, sweeping the Rays in June is not nothing, but then if it's not indicative of being a playoff team right now, then what does it mean? What did you take from this weekend?
Well, the same thing I've been saying for a while here, which is this team fights hard, right? They don't accept the fact that they're not supposed to win this year, that they are undermanned, that they don't have enough talent, et cetera. Every time it looks like they're about to give up for the year and go into the tank and just kind of, you know, settle down and let the rest of the season play out somewhere well below 500, they roll off a bunch of wins in a row. Their pitchers do what they need to do. They come up with some clutch hits. And to me, that's a matter of leadership. Leadership in your front office, specifically with Jerry DePoto, even more so with Scott Servais, who's, you know, their on-field general. And then what you get from the leadership on the team, Marco Gonzalez, Mitch Haniger, J.P. Crawford, the guys that are specifically leading this team, they get them out there, keep them out of the extended slump, and have allowed them to go out and do some pretty neat things this year, including sweeping one of the better teams in baseball in Tampa Bay.
Song, what would make you feel like this team is ready to push, not playoffs, but to really, really take that next step? Because it's one thing to win a series and have a great, you know, exciting, fun weekend. It's another thing to really carry that momentum forward and propel you forward as a team. What would make you feel like they have been able to do that?
You know, I think it would take a record that's significantly over 500, right? Show you that, okay, this group actually is enough. You know, winning a few games, having a good week, you know, that's the whole adage, right? Of every team's going to win 60, every team's going to lose 60. What do you do with the 40 in between? And they're finding ways to win some of the 40 in between. But, you know, you probably need to have a little bit more dominance, just a little bit more talent and depth up and down both your lineup and your rotation. But, you know, you kind of look at where the lineup is compared to what we saw a couple of months ago when they were virtually incapable of stringing hits together, and legitimately the lineup looks better, right? We see guys like Jake Bowers who have come in and helped. You see the catching position, which is no longer a black hole in the order. J.P. Crawford has turned himself from being a guy that was not hitting at all at the beginning of the year to being at times the best hitter on this team. So, you know, you put it together, their lineup looks significantly different. Is it ready to compete with the Astros and A's in the West? Not quite yet, but maybe not as far as we thought they were a couple of weeks or months ago.
So if they propel themselves and they're actually hitting better, they're improving as a roster, they're able to keep some of that momentum going forward. Is that the mark where the Mariners should be aggressive when it comes to the trade deadline time?
Well, aggressive in their own way, I think, is the way you got to look at this. I don't see how the Mariners can go out there and trade prospects for short-term rentals, which would be your sort of traditional going forward at the deadline. They're 5.5 games out of a wild card berth. I don't know that it makes sense for them to sacrifice any part of their future. But it does make you think about how you want to handle veterans like Kyle Seager and Mitch Haniger. And thankfully, they've got some time here before they've got to make decisions on either of those guys. We talked about how DePoto didn't sound very encouraging on the idea of signing Haniger to an extension. And I think we all believe that Kyle Seager is probably going to be exiting at the end of the year. So, you know, those long-term issues don't go away just because you come up with a few wins, but they certainly complicate the question or perhaps change the way you view it. The one thing I love about Jerry is he is not binary with these things. He does not look at the deadline or anything else and say, either it's prospects for veterans or veterans for prospects. He has found ways to do things that come up with both. And I think the Marco Gonzalez, Tyler O'Neill trade is probably the best example. You got to go back a few years, but when he dealt for Marco Gonzalez, he traded a prospect, but he didn't get an older veteran with 1 year left in his deal. He traded for another young guy that could be a part of their core moving forward. So I think those are the types of deals he will have to look for if they want to try to make moves at the deadline.
Do you think, barring one of those deals, it would be a mistake to trade Haniger?
I'm not opposed to trading Haniger for the right value. You know, it depends what you can get back for him, but I'm not opposed to it, especially if you don't think that you can sign him long term. This is when his value is highest. Mm. If that's what you got to do, then I think that's what you got to do.
All right. He is Mike Salk, joins us every weekday at 11:30. Thanks, Mike.
All right, guys.
The Mariners have a couple of big decisions to make this year when it comes to building a championship team. One of them has a legit deadline, a real deadline, and that's their decision on Yusei Kikuchi. Everything you need to know about that coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
2-1 pitch. Swinging a chopper, bouncing to J.P. Crawford. He charges, throws on to first. Plenty of time to get Manuel Margot. Yusei Kikuchi, he's about to get a standing ovation inside T-Mobile Park as he walks off for the night. 7 innings, just one run allowed against the first-place Tampa Bay Rays.
A phenomenal season so far for Yusei Kikuchi, and also his last with the Mariners pending their decision on what to do with his contract. That's a decision, Jake, they'll need to make just a couple days after this year's World Series. There is a real deadline for that. So what do they do? Do you move forward with Yusei Kikuchi? Do you take on much more money, a much bigger contract than you're currently paying him? I think the answer is yes. I don't know how you don't, but we're going to dive into this a little bit. If you want to join the conversation, 710-710, Mac and Jack's text line. Now, let's first go to what Service has to say. This was Scott Service on what's different with Yusei Kikuchi this year.
Command. It really comes down to command. Yusei's got great stuff, an electric fastball. The cutter is kind of the pitch that kind of keeps it going. If he needs to throw a strike and he's losing it a little bit, he goes to the cutter, leans on it heavily. The slider was a really good pitch tonight. So the consistency, the quality of his stuff, being able to repeat it, so it's not just an inning here or inning there. He gets rolling and he starts feeling it. And you can just see the confidence growing. Like, they're not going to hit this guy. He knows it. And it's great to see.
You look at Yusei and, you know, you have Scott Service talking about his control, his command. How about his confidence? Like, you watch Yusei Kikuchi in year three. It is so much different than years one and two. The moment he got hit, the moment that someone got on base in years one and two, he completely fell apart. I mean, you had a guy that was ultra-talented in his stuff. That was undeniable. But in terms of the mental toughness, I would say, it was not where it needed to be. And here in year three, you could just see Yusei, not only his stuff is really in command, but the other part of it too is that if he's ever been in a jam, if he's ever been hit, if he's given up a home run, he has come back and he has stayed steady throughout the process. And to me, that is what's given me confidence in Yusei Kikuchi this year. We've always known that he's had unbelievable stuff, but how clutch can he be? And you talk about Yusei, I mean, he's registered his 8th quality start in the last 9 starts he's had. He has a 2.53 ERA right now, and while holding opponents to a 173 batting average against. I mean, you talk about what he's doing and the numbers that he's putting up right now. It's really, really impressive in terms of what Yusei's done. So now coming back to the decision that they have on hand, do they pick up this option? I mean, that is critical for the Mariners.
Now, let me explain the option. So just a couple days after the close of the World Series, the Mariners have a decision to make. They can decide if they want to exercise the club option. So this picks up in 2022, and it is a 4-year option. So it's not just like, hey, we got to decide if we want to pay Yusei Kikuchi next year. You decide whether you want to exercise a 4-year option on Kikuchi. That pays him an average of about $16.5 million per year in base salary. That $16.5 million per year technically begins in 2023. Yusei Kikuchi would be 34 in the final year of that option, which would be the year 2025.
Now, that is the part that gives you some hesitancy, right? Paying somebody from years 30 to 34. But I think Ryan Divish, honestly, he said it best when he was talking with Danny and Gallant earlier this morning, had a chance to listen to him. And he was talking about how right now, if you say Kikuchi is on the market, you decide to let him walk after this season, can you replace that same production at a similar price in terms of what his option would be carried. You said 4 years, $66 million. Mm-hmm. If Yusei goes on the market right now, today or tomorrow, he is getting a massive payday. I mean, you're talking probably more towards $80 to $100 million in total of his value. That's how much he's increased his value, and that's how well he's pitching this year. And you're not going to be able to replace that production at a cheaper price. If you're the Mariners, this is about as good as it gets right now. And considering the state of the union of your rotation, this is a no-brainer. But we'll see how it continues to go. But I can't imagine that this would fall off so much so that you would say, no, we're going to let Yusei Kikuchi walk and leave your rotation that wide open. I mean, I don't think that they could do it. And so I think that Yusei has really established himself as somebody that the Mariners have to bank on being a part of this starting rotation for the future.
Yeah, I'm looking at just some comparable deals. I mean, you look at the Dodgers, who have, if not the biggest payroll in MLB, I believe they do, certainly like a top two, top three payroll in MLB right now. You have a lefty, AJ Pollock, is getting $15 million base salary. I mean, it's starting pitcher money. It's not top of the, you know, line pitcher money. It's not, you know, Bauer's in here at a 31.3 payroll, 28 base salary. It is a notable amount of money. It would make him probably the highest paid player on your roster, considering you probably won't have Seager, who was making about 15. But you also, and again, Divish pointed this out this morning with Danny and Gallant, you also aren't really paying anyone else. It's not like you got this payroll where you have to account for bringing in a couple superstars and you're paying, Kelnick or Lewis or whoever, because you had to give them an extension. You have no one else that you're really paying and dedicating that much money to, especially if Seager isn't on your payroll. So, I mean, it's like you said, Jake, like, what else are you using it on? And more importantly, like you said, who else do you have?
Well, you can't convince people that you're serious about winning and then letting Yusei Kikuchi walk. Like, that's just ultimately where we're at right now, because you've opened up the floodgate in terms of where you guys are at with your starting rotation. You would have to go out there and spend money to fill that. And if you're going to approach it like you did this last year, how about a big, massive mistake that they made this last year of signing James Paxton over Taiwan Walker? You didn't want to pay an extra couple million dollars more for a younger, healthier pitcher. And, oh, by the way, Curtis, last time I checked, Taiwan Walker's been pretty good this year, right?
He's going to be an all-star.
Oh, man, I forgot about that.
I don't like that.
If you're going to nickel and dime your way through the process, it's not going to work for you. At some point, as I've said before, many times before, and I will continue to say it again, at some point as a Mariners organization, you have to plant your flag down and say, you know what, we are actually building. We are not rebuilding. We are moving forward. And we have our core nucleus. We feel good about the guys that we have, our young talent, and we need to build around that. And Yusei is one of the pieces that should be a part of this process coming out of it. He is right now showing promise not only with his talent, but also in dominating performances and what he can be for your rotation. This is a no-brainer.
Once again, it is very exciting to see some of the young pieces that they have on this team, the young building blocks that they have. You don't get to a World Series just with building blocks. It's important to have that core. We've talked about the Astros having Correa, having Altuve, having Springer as three drafted pieces. I said that very Boston-like, having Springer in there. Three drafted pieces. You also look at the teams that have won a World Series and where they rank in terms of payroll. I think there's been like one or two that have fallen outside the top half in total payroll, and the vast majority of them top 10 total payroll. World Series winners spend. The Mariners, whether it's next year, whether it's 2023, they're going to have to do it if they want to win. That is how you win a World Series. Very, very few teams have broken that mold, and I don't know that the Mariners will be one of them. They will have to spend. Let's see if that starts at least with Yusei Kikuchi. All right, we have some other bits of news to get over. Mariners over 500 in late June. That's not nothing, but what is it? We'll ask Mariners Radio Network's Gary Hill next.